cars.
That is my new maintenance worker, Nate. And you'll be happy to know that he's taking care of that hornet's nest that you've been griping about.
Yeah, I got stung up my dress.
Poor hornet.
I've left him all the tools he needs. This is do or die. If he chooses correctly, he'll conquer the hornets.
And if he doesn't?
He'll die.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again. Before we get into our interview with Ben Standig of The Athletic, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. And before we get into the interview and our mojo markets and our discussion about the NFL in general, we have to point out that this show is sponsored by Mojo. How would you like to invest in your favorite players? Well, now you can with Mojo. Mojo has over 300 NFL players listed, so you can invest in rookies like Brock Purdy or Bam Knight, or superstars like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, or Justin Jefferson. Prices move with every play, every game, and every headline, and you can buy and sell instantly anytime all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download Mojo in the Apple App Store today and start turning playmakers into moneymakers. Must be 21 or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info. Fellas, hello.
Well, this is the biggest game of Daniel Jones's career by far.
Yeah.
By far.
Biggest game of his life.
By far. Yeah. I saw some dialogue today about people trying to downplay it. There's no downplaying this.
Nope.
If Daniel Jones is going to be this team's starting quarterback in 2023, this game is going to go a long way.
I am making a promise right now that if the Giants are down in this game at any point by three scores, I'm going to start tweeting out Anthony Richardson highlights.
I told somebody today, I said, you can do both. I mean, it could be both. Like, it's possible.
Not in your eyes, because you said yourself they make the playoffs, he's back. So
no, he's back, but I still don't. I'm not ruling out them not drafting a quarterback. I saw what the Eagles did. I mean, it worked for them. It's copycat league. In particular, Daniel Jones, this is it. This is the game for him. This is it. If you can't downplay it, you can't look at it any other way. Daniel Jones has to win this game by any means necessary.
Yeah.
I understand it goes against everything I say about quarterbacks and how wins our team stat, but there are certain things that are just different. This is different. He's been the
same. I mean, listen, we talk about it like, yeah, it's not necessarily a quarterback stat, but like it is a quarterback stat for sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think
we can't meat ride Justin Herbert and not acknowledge that he's got his team in a pretty good spot considering all the things that have gone wrong.
Exactly.
Know?
And all the things he's dealing with. Look, it's pretty simple. You've been the quarterback for 5 years. This team is not, outside of one season where the division was historically bad, you have not sniffed the playoffs or even sniffed meaningful December football, if I'm not mistaken. You have a chance Sunday night. Obviously, everybody brings up the record. I don't put that all on him, but it's a good talking point. But you haven't necessarily had any success on a Sunday on prime time. It's a big game. I think the Giants essentially locked themselves into a playoff spot if they win. We'll see. But this is it, man. Like, you got to lead this team to a victory. And this team can't lose this game because it'll go a long way in determining what his future is. Is it unfair? Sure. But that's just the way it is for a quarterback. They get... You, Ethan, know, and I know, and Nick, you know, how much credit they get sometimes when team has success. Well, sometimes you get too much blame, too. And I think that this is one of those instances. The Giants have to win this game. It's important for his career, more so than any other player on this team, including the running back.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I got a few people tweeting at me this week after my rant last episode, and a lot of people liked what I had to say when I said that Daniel Jones is not the problem. He's not the only problem. I mean, he is a problem, but he is not the solution. Prove to me, be the solution in prime time. Be the solution.
It's very straightforward. The Giants win this game, they have a 90% chance to make the playoffs. They lose this game, they have a 13% chance to make the playoffs. It's that simple. And likewise said, you win this game, you're pretty much in no matter what. You lose, you're pretty much screwed and you're praying for help. This is the game where whatever you got, I need every single gimmicky bullshit play they have in the repertoire. I need a double pass. I need a tackle eligible receiver. Like
Penny I need Richie James on reverse.
Yes. Yeah. I need every bell and whistle gimmicky bullshit play they have on sheet.
We need the Wildcat. We need the Wildcat.
Yes. We need the Wildcat. Yeah. We need the Wildcat. We need
a fake punt.
Yes.
No, and never mind. No, actually, we don't need Thomas McGahee.
It's too much to ask.
Fake
for.
Punt. Yeah.
Too much to ask. Yeah. For.
We can have a fake field goal, like Graham Gano throw a pass.
Yes,
we can do.
I'm on board with that. Yes.
Yes. Anything you can do gimmicky, you need, because you can't go out being conservative in a game like this, because this is your season. This is about as close as it comes to a do or die game in the NFL. And if you go out and you lose, you left everything out there, you pulled out all your gimmick plays, and the other team just outplayed you, you can live with that. But if you lose this game by a field goal because you gave them too much time left at the end of the game, or you punted away from the 45 trying to play field position, this is not the week for that. I know they've tried to play it very safe the last couple of weeks, and this is the kind of game where if you make Heinicke make a mistake, you'll win the game, but you can't wait for the other team to make a mistake. You have to find a way to make a play.
You've got to out riverboat Ron.
Exactly.
That's a very overrated nickname.
I'm saying it, that is his nickname. You've got to you want to talk about overrated nicknames, Danny Dimes.
You have to Danny out Pesos.
You have to out riverboat Ron.
I'm with you. I just think for me, look, man, you guys know how much how important the quarterback position is. Sometimes you just need your quarterback to, carry the load. I'm not saying I know the situation. I know the situation of receiver. I know the situation on the offensive line. I get it. But sometimes, man, you just need your quarterback to make plays, and they need it this week.
Do it with your legs.
They need him to have his A game. It can't be a C Daniel Jones game, or he was all right. Look, this is it. All right. You talked about the playoff probability. I would attach that to Daniel Jones as well in terms of his probability of coming back. So it's a big
13%.
Game. It's very, very important. And even with Saquon Barkley, I think he's a running back. We know their impact on games is not as much unless he has an out-of-body game that he sort of had through the first 7 weeks. But they need – I do think the Giants are going to win this game. I don't know how you guys are feeling about it. But, man, if they lose, it's going to be a tough, tough pill to swallow, especially after the hot start.
Yeah. I mean, I'm numb to it at this point.
You are. I mean, in hindsight, when they won their seventh game, I said if they could lose the rest of their games, but this is still one of their more successful seasons.
Yes.
But you want to make the playoffs.
Of course.
You want to make the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, let's do stock up, stock down, presented by Mojo. This is where we start turning playmakers into money makers. We're going to highlight some of this week's top performing, or this past week's top performing players, and some people who didn't have as hot of a week going into the fantasy playoff landscape. We just spoke about this pregame, but it's looking good for your boy, and it's also not looking good for your boy. I am simultaneously fighting for a trophy and to not be Sacco in one league, but I digress. All right, let's do risers. This, because we're recording this on Thursday early evening.
Gotta talk about my boy Brock Purdy, man.
Gotta talk about Brock Purdy. I am all aboard the Brockett ship.
He 16-21, 185, two touchdowns.
Zero interceptions. His stock is up 12.24%. Not a bad first career start for Mr. Irrelevant going up against Tom Brady. I have to admit, I was skeptical. But, man, listen, I feel like this guy gets dumped on a lot, but Kyle Shanahan, there are few coaches that you would take over him any given Sunday. I'm going to say this right now because we're recording 2.5 hours before kickoff. I see everyone is betting Seattle money line +3.5.
Hell no.
49ers are going to run the ball down Pete Carroll's throat through his asshole into the end zone.
Absolutely.
This is going to be
throw the ball too.
I mean, listen, it's funny because people are going to be listening to this on a Friday morning or a Friday afternoon. We're gonna know the results. So everyone's either gonna clown me for this prediction or not. San Francisco 49ers defense has given up fewer than 1,000 yards rushing this like total this season. Seahawks defense has given up over 2,000 yards. They're literally one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL this year.
They're going to make Geno Smith right back.
It's going to be, I think that this could be like blowout territory. I understand Mr. Irrelevant versus the 12th man. I get it. But I don't think that making him throw the ball is part of the game plan. I think they just run it down their throats. I think that bodes well for Brock Purdy's stock. Even if he is not balling out, a win on the road, second contest, I am buying Brock Purdy on Mojo.
I bought Brock Purdy last week, and I'm just watching
it rise.
Just watching it keep going. I'm riding this thing out. Brock Purdy is, you know, they talk about Shanahan and running backs. You can just plug anybody in. He's doing it with quarterbacks now.
Yeah.
Jimmy G, remember Nick Mullins came in? That? Like
I saw a funny tweet. It was like Kyle Shanahan's the first professional coach to win a game with a quarterback from both Iowa and Iowa State. Like he's dominating. Exactly. He's dominating the NFL on hard mode.
Yeah.
Like I just don't get it.
They have an excellent roster.
They do.
The Debo loss hurts, but I mean,
he'll be back.
Ayuk is good.
Ayuk. They have Kittle. They have McCaffrey. Like they have weapons.
The other receiver.
Jennings, very good. Yes.
They're going to run the ball, and they're not going to. Brock Purdy threw the ball 21 times last week. I don't think he's going to throw the ball more than that this week. I think he's going to same, 15, 20, 25 pass attempts. A lot of conservative stuff. Same stuff you saw with Jimmy G. This is one of the things I said about Garoppolo is I think it's more the system and the team than it is him. And
I agree.
You've seen it with Purdy. He just steps in. I'm not taking anything
away
from him.
But you can ride that
on the Mojo app.
Like that stock's going to go up.
Oh, yeah.
Whether he's directly responsible or not. Okay. Next riser. Former Giants legend, Evan Engram. 11 receptions, 162 yards, 2 touchdowns. He doubled the next receiver in yards and led all receivers with 15 targets. He's up 9.4%. Are you buying the steam?
It's no surprise you're seeing the rise of Evan Engram playing alongside the great Trevor Lawrence, who we're now seeing coming of age. But a couple months ago, I told you guys to buy Trevor Lawrence stock.
You did.
He is coming of age. You're seeing it. I told you don't count his first year. You can't count his first year. That wasn't even a real football season for him. Evan Engram, Zay Jones, Travis Etienne, any one of these skilled players. They're playing with the great Trevor Lawrence. So you buy their stock. Engram, that was a great performance by Evan Engram. We haven't seen something like that, in the 4 years that he was here. But that's because we didn't have a quarterback as good as Trevor Lawrence. So, look, I'm not buying Evan Engram stock, but I'm just buying more Trevor Lawrence stock because of that.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. All right. Last up on the risers list, our very own Richie James, up 5.58%, 7 receptions for 61 yards and a touchdown, taking advantage of playing time with basically everyone else dead, injured, what have you.
Useless.
I bought enough Giant offensive player stock. I'm good.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna skip the Richie James talk then. That's totally fine. Please. Yeah. Okay. Fallers, Debo Samuel, minus 15.37%. I mean, this is purely reactionary, yes?
Based
on his injury. I'm buying the dip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dropped by 15%?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great time to buy Debo Samuel.
That's a good dip.
Especially because they say he's gonna be back for the regular season.
Yeah.
But I'm not buying Elijah Mitchell, down 10%. McCaffrey's now there. I'm not a believer in Elijah Mitchell going forward. I'm not buying his stock.
Okay.
Got a question for you guys, though. I always like to do these things with Mojo. There are, obviously, Ethan's boy, Zach Wilson, is now back to being quarterback 2 of the New York Jets. Ethan took a nice victory lap for that. Number 2 overall pick gets promoted to quarterback 2.
Ethan's boy. Zach Wilson. Nick, he's conveniently just not talking about Baker Mayfield at all, whose stock I am buying.
And now, I mean, I number two pick in the draft, got promoted back to quarterback two. We take a victory laps for that. I mean, come on.
But I'm not taking a victory lap. I'm taking a victory lap because you said he wasn't going to even dress the rest of the season.
If the Jets play Zach Wilson again, it'll be the biggest Jet move I've ever seen in my life.
They're going to have to if Mike White dies.
He's been getting lit up.
Just play.
No, they can't play Flacco.
With that said, Zach Wilson's stock is currently at $21.96. Carson Wentz is currently at $38.25. If I were to ask you guys are making an investment for the remainder of the season. Both teams are perfectly on that bubble of making the playoffs. Which quarterback are you buying stock for? Are you buying Carson Wentz stock? You think he's going to be back? Or are you buying Zach Wilson stock?
Zach Wilson.
I think you have to go with Zach Wilson purely on the chance Mike White actually dies at some point.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be playing the rest of the season in a Kevlar vest, basically. Like,
yeah.
And if Zach Wilson's promoted to quarterback two, I feel like that's the logical option there.
Remember one thing, guys. Even if he gets promoted and he plays like shit, his price is still going to go down. So
yeah,
that's true.
You might be safe just having your money put on a Carson Wentz just sitting on the bench because.
I can't bet legal U.S. currency on Carson Wentz in any context. I that ship has long sailed. Since that meltdown against Jacksonville last year, I can't in good conscience invest in Carson Wentz.
No way.
That was Stock Up, Stock Down.
Presented by Mojo. All right, we now welcome in our guest, Ben Standig, senior writer at The Athletic. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Big week.
Awesome. Big week. Big, big week for both teams. Playoffs on the line. Commanders, I think now 4.5-point favorites against the New York Giants. Let's break it down. Weiss, let's start with you.
Yes. Us Giant fans know what this game means. Obviously, it's a big game for us, but coming into the season, our expectation was not to be playing meaningful games in December. It was a sort of new regime. It was a rebuilding, a lot of changes coming for the, you know, it was a rebuilding year, transition year. What about for the Commanders? Because I'm familiar with the D.C. area. Live in the D.C. area. It seemed like this season was like, okay, we feel like we upgraded at quarterback with Carson Wentz. Now it's like, was the goal like, let's get to December and play meaningful football? Or was it like, because I know there was higher expectation than what the Giants had, but what was the expectations for the Commanders entering this season versus where they are now?
Yeah, the expectations here, when you make the deal for Carson Wentz, that wasn't just about hope for the best. That was like, hey, we need to go to another level. And ironically, I think a lot of us thought as the season was about to start that there were more questions about the defense than the offense. The defense really, you know, took a step back last year after a really good 2020. Chase Young, who is still out, was, you know, not going to start the season. There were questions in the secondary. There were questions at linebacker. And Carson Wentz, his ability to get the ball down the field combined with the playmakers they have gave, I think, a lot of hope that this team actually could score some points, which is why it's so ironic. But now they're in this situation in which it's back to Taylor Heinicke under center and the offense. It's been more efficient, but less high-powered. And that's not exactly where I think they thought they were going when they made the deal. I don't think anybody was thinking they were going to contend for the Super Bowl or the NFC title, but, you know, they had been under 500 in both of Ron Rivera's first two seasons, even though 7-9 was good enough to win the NFC East in 2020. So that's what's so fascinating about this is they've, on the one hand, not evolved offensively completely, and yet they're actually been more efficient this year. By the way, the defense obviously has been the driving force. They actually have done better. Some of the quick concerns have kind of gone away. So, it's weird. I mean, when you start 1-4 after a bad year, it's hard to say they've exceeded. I mean, it seemed like we'd say they've exceeded expectations, and yet at the start of the year, I'm sure they would have said, yeah, we need to be 7-5 or I don't know if they're 7-5-1, at this point, because that's why they went and made the deal that they made.
Right. Sometimes it's not about how you start, it's about how you finish. And Giants trending in the opposite direction there. I guess going back to the first game that ended in a very confusing tie, what did you like from the Commanders? And is there anything that you noticed that was working really well against the Giants that you expect them to do again this coming weekend?
Well, I mean, I think they did a good job of getting the ball into the hands of their playmakers on offense. Jahan Dotson obviously made the game tying touchdown with that fantastic spin move. That was his sort of best game in some time, or certainly since he's come back from his injury. You know, Terry McLaurin, you know, is a constant threat for them, and Brian Robinson, you know, has really, for me, the number one reason why the offense has grown over the last month or so is because he's become central to the offense. Obviously, he went through a terrible situation in the offseason, kept them off the field the first month of the year, and now he's really starting to give you this true tone setter with his power running. Defensively, look, I mean, their front four, particularly John Allen and Jerron Payne in the middle, have really been a force all year. And I think by and large, you know, they did a good job against Saquon Barkley. Those are the things that are what this team is about. Run the ball, stop the run, control the clock, keep the defense fresh, and kind of go from there. And they largely were able to do that. Daniel Jones always crushes these guys. It's the wackiest thing. So, you know, that's something they have to deal with. But those basic elements, they were able to do it enough in that first meeting. And if they can do it again, they'll probably be successful.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ethan, go ahead.
No, I was just going to make a joke. I mean, Daniel Jones, 0-11 in primetime, but versus the Commanders, unstoppable object versus – Yeah, immovable objects. Yeah. Yeah. I forget the idiom at this point. Weiss, you're muted, but Nick, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to ask, for the Giants, who are clearly kind of in a rough situation the last couple of weeks, struggling to find a way to win, what's their best method of attack against the Washington defense, which has been so good the last couple of weeks especially?
Well, I mean, Daniel Jones' legs, obviously he historically does really well against them, but Washington typically under Jack Del Rio in the 3 years has been pretty poor against mobile quarterbacks. I was just actually looking this up earlier. Since 2020, they've allowed the most rush yards to quarterbacks and the second highest yards per carry. This year, Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, and Daniel Jones have done well against them. But even in the game before the tie, they played Atlanta, and Marcus Mariota had a pretty good game as well. So it is two games in a row that they've given up plays to running quarterbacks. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. The other component I would say is what's going to happen in their secondary. Benjamin St. Juice did not play in the last game, one of their starting cornerbacks. As we're talking, he's been practicing this week. He's looked pretty good. He's still been listed as like limited in practice, but has looked pretty good to my eye. So if he's out there, that's a huge boost for Washington. If not, attacking whoever is his replacement, it would be the move to go, because they have almost no depth at corner. So, you know, even just testing St. Juice on his ankle might be something worth trying. I mean, that's the thing, right? Daniel Jones, he basically didn't throw any incompletions in the last game until the final couple seconds of regulation and overtime, which is nuts. So those would probably be the couple things to do. I would just probably say on the other side of the ball, you know, getting ahead of Washington and forcing Taylor Heinicke to have to throw a lot is probably a good way to go. He can make plays, particularly in the clutch, but you don't want him throwing the ball for Washington 30, 40 times a game.
Another guy that has sort of been limited, obviously, is Chase Young. And when the season started, it was PUP out for 6 weeks. Let's see where we are after that. But now, you know, we're at what, week 15, and he's yet to make his debut. What is the status of him? Because after the first meeting, we thought, okay, he's going to be back post-bye, but checking in with the Commanders' injuries, he's still limited. So is the debut happening this week, or is it still up in the air? And if he's not playing this week, like, when is he going to be back?
I was going to ask you guys, because honestly, at this point, I think we're all just kind of guessing. I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, basically, as best we can tell, he's been given clearance to play. He was, you know, they brought him off. They gave him that 21-day window off IR to practice. And that was a while ago at this point, more than 3 weeks ago. And Ron Rivera said they did that because they needed him to start getting some physical contact. He needed to start getting pushed around and pushing guys and that type of deal to get to the next step. Those 3 weeks have come and gone. They did put him on the active roster so they didn't lose him for the year, but it hasn't gone further. And basically the inference is that Chase Young has to have confidence in that knee to go out there and do what he needs to do. And look, I think that's, I can only imagine how challenging that's got to be. You know, if you haven't had, you know, significant injuries before, getting used to that, trusting your body to hold up and not have to go through all this again. But you're right. I wasn't surprised that he hasn't played till this point, but if he doesn't play this week, now you really have to start asking questions about, you know, what is going on here, because it's been over a year now, well over a year now, since he had the injury as well as had surgery. Injuries like this, it can take a year, which if it can take a year, it can take 13 months, right? I'm not questioning that, but where is this thing going? Plus, there would only be 3 games left in a year at that point. So I don't know. I mean, based on talking to everybody this week, it's a very vague situation. I don't think this is just gamesmanship because even if he does play, we're talking 10 to 15 plays. He's going to be on some sort of a pitch count. So it's not like he's going to come out there and, you know, be on the field every snap or whatever. Not to mention, I have low expectations for what he'll contribute. Not to say he's not a good player. I just, you know, if he hasn't been on the field all this time, well, where is he at? So I don't know. I would love to tell you he's going to be playing, but at this point, I don't know.
One other guy that I'm curious and I want to ask you about, because you mentioned it earlier, when people think of the Commanders and they think of the various playmakers that they have on offense, one of the number one guys that people will mention is Terry McLaurin. A lot of people were excited about Jahan Dotson. You know, Brian Robinson obviously had a lot of press early in the season because of what had happened to him. And even Antonio Gibson was a bit of a fantasy darling the last couple of years because of the value that people were getting on him and a lot of people were following him. One of my personal favorites that I feel doesn't get spoken about, at least in the national media as much, and maybe it's different locally, is Curtis Samuel, because it seems like when the team scripts plays specifically for him, they're almost always successful. And I sort of look at his charts and I look at his game logs, and the targets in the receiving game seem to be very bipolar from the start of the season to now. Even in the rushing game, the volume seems a little bit low. I'm curious from your perspective why they aren't utilizing him as heavily as I think that they should be.
Yeah, it's interesting. Offensive coordinator Scott Turner today was asked about the fact that since Samuel is as explosive as he is, does he is it almost a challenge to figure out how best to use him? And he said that basically, you know, yeah, for him, it's really like he wants to make sure he doesn't overuse him so he doesn't, you know, kill the guy. Look, last year, obviously, he was basically out all year, right?
Yeah.
Because of an injury. And it was a kind of a weird situation. They clearly, not saying they botched something in the surgery, but in the something was going on in the whole recovery period. He more or less was lost for the year. And I think they were very concerned about having something like that happen again. They really kind of, you know, spoon fed him through training camp and things like that. So I think there's probably some of that in the back of their head, the recognition of we can't overuse this guy. But to Curtis's credit, he has been healthy all year. They do use him in a lot of different ways. They use him outside, they use him in the slot, they run him 3, 4, 5 times a game. He's pretty effective running the ball. So, you know, he's getting touches, but I'm with you. It doesn't always feel like he's almost never the leading receiver.
Right.
And he's not going to be the leading rusher getting 3 or 4 carries, yet he's still getting, you know, 8 to 12 touches depending on the situation, which is going to be more than Terry McLaurin perhaps. So they're using him, and plus they also have, you know, they have 2 other really good receivers. They have 2 really good running backs. So it's almost like he's an extra piece. And that's where I think he becomes effective, where it's almost like, because he's not the main focal point, the opposing defense kind of doesn't know what to do. Plus he's, you know, they use him in jet sweeps and arounds, all kinds of deals. So they've come up with creative ways to use him, but I do get your point. It doesn't feel like they feature him enough. And yet at the same point, like I said, his touches are typically more than the other receivers because of the running. So it is sort of a little bit of a weird feel in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's been a fan of him since he was in Carolina before this, right, with Ron, I'm sort of upset that I don't get to see him more, but at the same time, I'm happy as a Giants fan because it feels like if the usage was there, he would be sort of like a Debo type player. So I don't know, just something that's always confused me.
Oh, so the last question I had was, How important was it for Washington to kind of turn it around this year after the last two, the first 2 years of Ron Rivera kind of being up and down, inconsistent, where the quarterback positions changed, like bringing Carson this year? And there were question marks early in the season. Like we said, they came out of the gate 1-4. It didn't look great. Carson got benched. They've kind of turned it around. They have a pretty good chance of making the playoffs. How important was it for them to turn this thing around at that point?
Well, look, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but this team's in the news a lot. I think that have nothing to do with all the field stuff.
I was going to make my last question, is Dan Snyder going to sell? But I'll hold off on that.
Yeah, but like, so, you know, there's constant dark clouds over the head here. And then when you tack on losing, I mean, look, you know, every team goes through stretches. You know, the Giants haven't been crushing it in the wins and losses either. But then you tack on this other component and you know, a lot of fans have, you know, boycotted the team or kind of just turned off their fandom. So to have another losing year on top of what's been going on is really a lot to take. They start this year 1-4, even they won in Chicago in week 6, but it was like an ugly 12-7 game. And what, you know, so I don't think a lot of people saw this coming, even though Ron Rivera teams typically improve over the course of a year. But yeah, it's huge because, you know, independent, and we can talk about the ownership thing in a second, but like independent of that, if they had lost, if this season had kept going down the 1-4 path, you know, we're looking at possibly, are they going to get rid of the head coach, who also is effectively the general manager? They still need a quarterback, and then there's the ownership stuff. So I think this would have been a huge disaster, not to mention a lot more work for me. But at least now, that's what makes this game so interesting. Home game, Sunday night, big stakes. It really feels like this is the biggest game in the Rivera era. I mean, they did play a playoff game in the first year, but I don't think anybody thought that was, most people thought that was sort of cute. This feels like a real thing. And with the NFC being down this year, you know, I'm not going to say Washington is an automatic contender in the conference, but I don't know. Maybe. I don't think that any of these teams at the top definitively scare me. You guys may have a different view after the Eagles last week. That's what makes this so big, because they were able to go from being, oh boy, here we go again, to, hey, maybe there's something here. Again, I'm still not looking at them as a big contender, and there's a quarterback question that's not going to get solved probably this year, but at least the defense has played a lot better, and on offense have got playmakers now. It's just a matter of, you know, getting to that next level.
We can let's talk about the ownership a little bit. Obviously, you can be on Mars and you'll hear about Daniel Snyder. It just seems like right now this is headed towards him selling the team, and everybody has seen, you know what, but living in this area, I know a lot of Washington Commanders fans. I talk to them, and it just seems like a lot of the juice has been squeezed out of them. They're not excited about this sort of turnaround in the season. They're happy for it. They're rooting for it, but they're not. You know, I know people that are like, I'm not going to go to the stadium. The stadium is not worth going to. I'll root from home. But a lot of it is tied to Daniel Snyder. We talked to J.P. Finley a couple weeks ago, and he said, look, this is going to be a process. What is the latest on that? Like, where are we? Is this going to be a situation that's going to drag out for years? I know Denver put their team for sale, I think, in August, and it didn't sell for another 8 months or something like that. This is different. This could get ugly. And I sort of expect it to get ugly. Like everything with Daniel Snyder does, anything with Daniel Snyder is going to get ugly. So how do you see this whole thing playing out with Daniel Snyder?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get like, you know, too far ahead and just say flat out it's going down the path where he's going to sell. But it does feel like you read the tea leaves, you know, hear what's going on, you talk to people, and it does feel like we're heading in that direction. I think you're right. I mean, most of us, I think, for years had said it's not going to happen, that he's not going to sell, we're going to, you know, be living in this world for who knows how long. But between the constant attention about this organization, his behavior, him overseeing this, you know, place that's had a lot of culture issues, I do think they have cleaned some things up in the last couple of years under Ron Rivera and under team president Jason Wright, but it doesn't, you know, this doesn't completely get rid of the stench that's gone on here forever. But the other component is he recently bought out his minority partners, and in doing so took on a lot of debt. And I think that's another component here that doesn't get talked about enough, that he's got more money than most of us, but he's also spending a lot when you have a professional team. So the debt component, anyway, he's got a significant debt that he's got to deal with. And that's one of the aspects of this team. I think the other owners don't want to actually have to vote him out, because that's where the dirty laundry aspect, I think, would come into play. They're hoping he goes voluntarily. It feels like we're heading in that way. How long does it take, though? You know, this isn't just independent of his own shenanigans. It's to sell a multi-billion-dollar company takes a minute. So, I think we're all kind of looking at the March owners meetings as a potential timeline. I don't want to say deadline, but a potential timeline. So that's kind of where we're at. But like in general, for me, I just feel like it's like a pitcher's throwing a no-hitter. We're in like the sixth or seventh inning. Just everybody be quiet. Just let the process play out. It seems like he's at least willing to listen, and it feels like he's headed in that direction, in part because, like I said, he's got this debt, in part because perhaps other pressures from others in the league, et cetera. So we'll see. I mean, it seems positive, but he's impulsive. I'm not going to assume anything until it happens.
Fair enough. All right, Ben, you've been very gracious with your time. Before we let you go, let's get a prediction.
Well, I mean, somebody's gonna win. I'll go with that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure about that.
No, but I'm gonna take a shot there. Look, I'm not gonna sit here and go home field advantage means a ton. Washington's home crowd has not been that great, but it's Sunday night. I imagine it will be about as juiced as it's been for some time. And I just do think that Washington is more balanced than the Giants. I mean, neither team is obviously pretty as dynamic a quarterback, but Washington's got more playmakers, and they've got, I think, a little bit more ways to beat you, because if you can slow down Saquon Barkley, I don't know the Giants have enough in the passing game. I think Washington's defense has been really good, obviously, over most of the season. So anyway, I think Washington's been pretty good most of the season. So I'll say like 2017 Washington, but if you want to yell at me and tell me it's going the other way, wouldn't say that that's crazy, but
certainly not at this point in the season, Ben. We're not going to tell you. We're not going to yell at you and tell you that you're wrong, that the Giants are going to win. Definitely not.
you might get a DM from me if things go the other way on Sunday night, but that's about it.
fair enough. I mean, obviously, that's what makes this game so interesting, is say whatever you want about one of these teams. If somebody wins, they have a huge leg up on the other one to make the playoffs, or at least stay ahead of that team. So huge stakes, obviously.
Right. All right. Ben, thank you very much for your time. Everyone can go follow him on Twitter at Ben Standig. Go check him out at The Athletic. Ben, thanks for your time.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, and good luck Sunday.
Let's do game predictions, and let's get out of here.
Okay.
Nick, you first, my man.
You know what? I'll be stupid. Give me the Giants 21.
That's smart.
16, 17, something like that.
All right. Ethan.
24-17 Commanders.
I'm going to go 16-10 Giants.
16-10. Yeah. I don't know if I even want to watch this game.
Giants will win. They are a better team than Washington, regardless of the talent deficiency. And I think you're going to get a big game from the Giants' defensive line, Aziz Ojulari and Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yeah.
They had a good game against Philly.
They did. They had a very good game.
And I think they're going to have another good game against offensive line they dominated
True.
2 weeks ago. So True. Going with the Giants, defensive line, it's going to be an old-school game, and the Giants are going to go back to their old-school ways of getting to the quarterback to win this game and put themselves in prime position. Don't worry about the game being on the road. That Giant fans take over that stadium anyway. Don't even sweat it. You're going to be seeing a lot of blue there. This is another Giant home game. This time they're going to win. Go with the Giants.
All right. And that wraps it up for this week's second NYG Weekly. We got to take care of the housekeeping before we go. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. And of course, check out the Mojo app in the App Store. Start turning playmakers into moneymakers. Must be 21 or older. Visit mojo.com. We will talk to you after the Commanders game. Have a great weekend. Peace.